Coast AM with George Norrie.
Tonight on Coast to Coast, we are going on a remarkable adventure with our guest, Jay Wagner. And this adventure could take us to places we might not want to go, but we're going to have to. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Jay Wagner. Is an author. He's a filmmaker. From 1991 to 1995, Jay was the public affairs director at KCMU-FM in Seattle. He also produced and hosted the weekly radio show called Mind Over Matters. He has written articles for many periodicals and journals over the years. In 1996 and 97, Jay produced and hosted the Awakening to Gaia conferences in Boulder, Colorado. These two conferences were designed to bring together many of the diverse scholars, authors, teachers interested in examining alternative historical and scientific theories. In 1997, Jay created and produced the alternative esoteric video catalog named Explorations. And from the years 98 to 2000, Jay was the video development director for Conscious Wave Productions, also in Colorado. He also produced, wrote, directed the nationally reviewed documentary for Conscious Wave titled Earth Under Fire. And since the year 2000, Jay has been the president of Sacred Mysteries Productions, a video production and distribution company. He's currently in production on a feature film called Secret Landscapes. He's our guest tonight at Coast to Coast. Hey, Jay, first time. Welcome.
Thank you, George.
My pleasure indeed. How did you get interested in these mysteries?
Well, that's an interesting question. originally, when I first became involved in the mystery that we're going to discuss tonight, I was really a kind of a completely different person than I ended up being after nearly 20 years of research. I was a pretty much a hard-nosed journalist. I believed in science and didn't really believe in any spiritual matters much. And then I got involved in all of this and got transmuted myself into a completely different person who now believes wholeheartedly in all of this and a lot of things that 20 years ago I would have been hard-pressed to say I believe in.
Was there one episode in your life, Jay, that began to point you in this direction?
Well, it really was. It was the it was my discovery in 1986 of the book Mysteries of the Cathedrals by a strange author with the name of Fulcanelli, and I actually set out to prove that everything in the book was actually wrong and that it was just a waste of time, and ended up finding that the book was perhaps one of the most important books ever written.
Now tell me about the author, Fulcanelli.
Yeah, well, Fulcanelli is the beginning of the mystery, because Fulcanelli is anonymous, and Fulcanelli lived in Paris in the 20s and published his book, Mystery of the Cathedrals, in 1926, and then supposedly disappeared from this world. He did make a couple more appearances, I guess, but the fact that he was anonymous really rang my bell. As a journalist, I knew one thing, and that was anyone who was interested in these kinds of things was usually carrying around an ego on a wheelbarrow, and being anonymous, I found extremely surprising. So that triggered my interest originally in the fact that no one knew who Falconelli was, and actually to this day, no one really knows.
It's almost as if whoever he might have been, he wanted just to get a message out and didn't really need the attention or the notoriety for it.
In fact, that's exactly right. In fact, he sought to not be found, and there are many cases, strange and odd cases that have gone through the years where it's quite obvious that the people who were around Falconelli are creating cover stories and trying to hide the fact of whoever he was or wherever he came from. The OSS, the precursor to the CIA,
sure,
actually instigated an investigation into Falconelli at the close of World War II and swept through Paris and almost all of France, searching for Falconelli and searching for anyone who knew him and questioning them and creating a huge file on Falconelli.
That's amazing. What, if anything, do you know about him?
Well, only what I can glean from his books, the real book that he wrote, which is Mystery of the Cathedrals. He tells us that he grew up in Amiens, which is a city north of Paris, and that he visited the cathedral there when he was a young boy. But there are striking anomalies in the text, things that he knows seem like only someone who had been alive for a long time would know, little details about Notre Dame, the cathedral in Notre Dame, and little details about the neighborhoods in Paris, and just striking things that once you start delving into the mystery, you begin realizing that Falconelli is intimating between the lines that he may have been around a lot longer than we or you or I could possibly be around.
Spell his name for us, Jay, so many of our listeners can do some of their own homework to try to track down some information.
It's Fulcanelli, Falconelli.
You didn't use a first name, just this name?
Just one name. There's various translations. It could mean the tunnel in the volcano, Vulcan. It could also be attributes to earlier alchemists who had names similar to Falconelli, or it could be an anagram. At this point, no one seems to know exactly who he was.
Well, this book then, Mysteries of the Cathedrals, which sent you on your path, when you read this book, was it mired in code, or was it a travelogue? What was it?
Oh, that's a good question. It's actually, as someone who considers themselves to be highly intelligent, the book, when I read the book, it was actually the first book, and I'd struggled through James Joyce's Ulysses and through various tomes on modern physics that would have wrenched serious minds, and I understood it. But when I read Falconelli, I didn't understand it. I couldn't understand it. And that vexed me beyond any measure, considering that I thought I was pretty intelligent, and here I was with a book in my hands that I absolutely could not comprehend.
Way over your head at that time?
Way over my head, way over anyone's head. In fact, the two books that I co-wrote are really the only books, full-length books, that are about what Falconelli is talking about. No one, French, English, American, German, anyone, no one has tackled Falconelli in the in-depth way, and not so much who Falconelli was, but what is Falconelli saying.
I had a guest a couple of years ago, Jay, as a matter of fact, 4 years ago, who has turned out to be one of our favorite guests and a dear friend of mine. And in my very first interview with him when I was filling in on this program, I read up on him, I studied him as well as I could. But I got to tell you, once I was into the interview process, like this book, Mysteries of the Cathedrals for You, I had no idea what he was talking about. It was way over my head. And I kept just scrambling to try to find things that I could talk with him about in angles, and I just didn't understand him. And then, you know, and I ended the interview abruptly, did not give him the justice that he needed. And maybe it was about 6 months or a year later, after I began to really understand and mature a little bit, not only into the show, but who he was, I began to realize what he was trying to tell us, and got him back again, and it was a delightful interview, and now they just click. So I can understand how you feel when you read this book for the first time and you didn't understand it.
Yeah, it was a very, very, very odd feeling. And so as I read the book, and I kept the book by my bedside for, well, it's still by my bedside, so almost 20 years now. I first read the book in 1986. So 19 years I've kept the book by my bedside, and about every 2 months I reread it. And it's one of those strange books that every time you read it, it turns into a different book.
Yeah.
It's a book you've never read before. And it's very coyly written. It is designed to ignite certain synaptic responses inside the brain. And I believe that actually the book is a very clever initiation designed by more than one person. I believe that Fulcanelli actually was a member of a very, very secret society.
Interesting.
Designed to enlighten the human race.
Without directly telling us.
That's right.
What he was trying to say.
Yes.
Could have been Masons, Templars. What do you think?
Well, my final opinion on that is that there's a group, and I'm doing some serious research on this right now, there's a group that sits above the Freemasonic orders, and it, until within the last 150 years, I think even the Freemasonic orders have begun to fall apart, but they sit above it and pretty much control the orders. But you have to understand that at this point in time, as we near the end of time, all systems are breaking down, so not even enlightened orders are being able to perform the tasks that they're needed to be performed at this time, because there's vast confusion and darkness all around, and very few people can deal with the large questions that are in front of the human race.
Some of the things that we're going to talk about tonight as it relates to the apocalypse and other issues, is it your opinion now, Jay, that things that people have been so concerned about, in other civilizations have always believed they were in their own end times, that they were going to be in their own apocalypse, it was going to happen. And it never did, even though they had their own problems that could seem like it was. Do you think we're in it now, or are we one of those civilizations like the past that we're having our own problems, and then the next group that pops up in 100 years will say, it's end times for us?
I think that, you know, all bets are off. I think that it's highly probable that what you're saying in the latter could be true. However, I do have to point out that extraordinary things are going on planet Earth right now, which are very problematic. And there seems to be a series of disorders going on, whereas there was only one or two disorders before. Now there's so many disorders that even logical people at the top of our government and of our ruling classes know that this can't go on forever, and that eventually there's going to be such a breakdown in the systems that there's going to be a calamity. There's more species going extinct now than there ever has been, both plant and animal. The water supplies are either drying up or they're so polluted they're becoming undrinkable. And I'm not trying to scare anyone. I'm just trying to point out.
Well, just, you know, you have to lay out what you believe, and that's important.
Go ahead. Well, what I'm saying is that though it's not, there's not, I don't believe that we're coming up to an apocalypse. I think we're coming up to what Fulcanelli calls the end of the Iron Age, or the end of the Kali Yuga, which is a cycle. And out of the Iron Age, as Fulcanelli tells us at the end of the book, comes the Golden Age. In other words, it's necessary.
It's an evolution.
It is. If you were born in a mansion and then you were given another mansion, it wouldn't be that big a thing to you. But if you were born in the ghetto and you were given a mansion, then that would be a big thing to you. So in order to appreciate what the coming age of reinvigoration, I call it, that's coming after 2012, we have to kind of go through the mess we're in now so that we can really appreciate how nice things will be when this finally gets over.
Yes. Absolutely. And if you were born in a mansion and you ended up living in a small little ghetto area, you'll appreciate it even more.
Absolutely. And that's where I think we're headed. I'm actually quite optimistic. I think that in the short term, it's going to be quite dangerous. And, you know, I agree with John Hogue. I think there's only two popes left. I think Fulton
really
would
okay.
agree with that.
And, interesting.
Yeah, and I think the church knows this. And by the way, the 2012 thing that's happening on the solstice, the winter solstice of 2012, is following the Venus transit, and the 2012 event is actually an eclipse of the center of the galaxy. So we're talking about eclipses. The Cross of Henday is talking about eclipses. And eclipses are of extreme importance to understanding the physics that lies behind what we're going through right now.
Well, we're going to talk more about the mysteries of the cathedrals, Jay, but on our website is a picture of you with several images that are linked up called the Cross at Henday. Now, I have popped up the second and third picture here. How tall is this cross?
How tall is it?
Yeah, so
it's
it looks
12
like
feet tall. 12 feet. The pedestal is about 3.5 feet. It sits up on a step, so it looks a little higher than it really is. But it's 12 feet tall. It has a pillar, a Greek pillar on the top that's 6 feet, and then it has a Greek cross on the top with a Latin inscription on one side that reads, of course, the famous words above Jesus, I-N-R-I, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. And on the other side is an odd, broken Latin inscription that Fulcanelli tells us is a message, a secret cryptic message that, you know, those who can understand will figure out.
Huh, now, this is in France. How old is this cross?
Best shot I can give it is about 350 years old. It may be a little bit older. I believe it was built by the same group of people that Nostradamus was associated with, and it was a little bit after Nostradamus. But there seems to be other imagery found in the area and in other places on Earth that fits it. And so the same images appear in several different places on Earth and appears to be handed down knowledge from, some kind of civilization that may have been more universal than our separated civilizations that we have today and may have had a large group of knowledge that they felt was important enough to hand down. And I believe that the Cross of Henday, or if you're in French, Undai, is really the culmination of this knowledge.
This mysterious monument, then, is a message for us that we are going to try to interpret?
That's what it is for, yes. It has no other reason to exist but that.
Well, if you have a computer, get up to it. It's on the homepage under the feature article, and take a look at all the images, because we're going to be talking about them during the program. And have scholars tried to figure out what it means, Jay?
Well, several people have tackled it. Bossuet, who is a French alchemist and writer, he attempted to crack it in the 30s, didn't do a very good job. There's another gentleman named Paul Meverell, who worked for NASA, I believe, and he attacked it in the late 70s and tried to really crack the cross. And he came up with a lot of very interesting things about the cross and helped me on my way. But I believe that a lot of people have cracked the cross, but they've never written about it. The reason being is that the cross points to another place on Earth, and so if you're really following the lead of the cross, you would go to the place that it's indicating to get even more information, presumably would be at the next place, and sort of lead you around to a series of places on Earth which allows you to understand the secret knowledge more completely.
Was this cross, this monument, mentioned in Fulcanelli's book, Mysteries of the Cathedrals?
Actually, it wasn't. It was not in the first edition, which was published in 1926. This is another thing that rang my alarm bell. In 1926, the chapter wasn't included, but the book was reprinted in 1957 and then translated into English and reprinted in 1959. And these two new reprints had the additional chapter, And frankly, the chapter is so jaw-dropping and so amazing in its science and its knowledge that one wonders why Folcanelli waited, or whoever waited, to, you know, almost 30, over 30 years to release the additional chapter. And my view, of course, is that it wasn't time in 1926, but it was time in 1957, 1959, to release the message of the Cross of Hendaye, because we were now within one lifetime of the end of time.
Interesting. Stay with us. Jay Widener, our guest. Fascinating, because what we're also going to get into is what are some of these mysteries behind these cathedrals. What were they trying to tell us? And who was this group? What made them so special? What did they know?
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com. Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, there are reports now that Prince Rainier of Monaco has died at the age of 81. He has not been in good health. I would assume that Prince Albert, whom I know, I met him in St. Louis, wonderful guy a few years ago, will take over. As a matter of fact, they changed the rules several years ago for him, because he's not married yet, so there's still no heir after him. And his sisters, of course, have children. And they changed the laws for him to allow him to ascend, I believe, to the throne. Or else Monaco was going to go back to France, as a matter of fact. But Prince Rainier of Monaco has died at the age of 81. You know, they say these things happen in threes, don't they? And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Jay Widener. Jay, let's talk a little bit more about the cross at Hendaye, if we can, and then we'll also, I guess we also have to intersperse, of course, the work of Folcanelli, because it had a great influence on what you started to do, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Folcanelli, I think Folcanelli may be one of the most intelligent people who's ever put a pen to paper.
Or group of.
Yes, exactly.
The cross at Hendaye. Do you think there was a specific reason for making it, or do you think it was just a great piece of monument artwork?
Well, I think actually, and there's a lot of evidence to back this up, that it was a series or succession of monuments that may have even existed in the same exact area going back thousands of years, and that every 300 or 400 years, because of erosion and things, it's recut and redone. And in fact, if someone doesn't make a new monument in Henday, the current monument will be completely eroded in about 50 years. So it's either the end of time, or it's time to remake the monument, or it's time to forget the symbology on the monument and just go on. However, I think that the symbols and what the cross is trying to tell us is so important that this society left it behind for us to discover and decipher and release the information at the proper time.
What do you think it was or is?
Well, there's the thing about the Cross of Henday, and I'm going into this in the book I'm writing next, is that you can go around the cross and go through the symbols, and each time, just like the book Mystery of the Cathedrals, it turns into a completely different explanation of a odd science called alchemy. And it each turn around the cross opens up a new facet of this ancient science. And so I think that it is a very, very clever vehicle that is put there to first attract the curious seeker. So the person who's already begins looking at the cross is already of a kind of ilk, a curious person, and also maybe bent towards trying to understand ancient knowledge and symbols. And from there, the person literally is transmuted or initiated into a profound knowledge that seems to permeate through every traditional culture on Earth. At the time that Fulcanelli was writing, John Woodward, also known as Arthur Avalon, was translating the Hindu tantric text just north of Paris, and I believe that they probably knew each other. And I think that everyone was beginning to compare notes from the Hindus and from the Buddhists and from the Tibetans and the Peruvian shamans and even the Mexican Aztec and Mayan people. And as they began to compare notes, they began to realize that they had clear-cut evidence of a worldwide civilization once that left behind a series of markers, information, star knowledge, knowledge of how to watch for a danger, a possible danger from outer space, and also the cycles, the four great cycles, or the four worlds, or the four ages, depending on which culture you're investigating.
Now, what do you mean by dangers from outer space? Asteroid type or something else?
Lots of things. It could be a series of disasters. One of the disasters that I came up against was the Paul LaViolette's work on the center of the galaxy having a periodic blow-off, which sends lots of matter and radiation outwards. And also there's just strange gravitational things that happen when there are eclipses. And so what happens when you have the ultimate eclipse, which is the center of the galaxy eclipsing with the sun, as will happen on the solstice of 2012, and what the cross seems to be indicating. And I think that gravity is relative, and I think there could actually be a small shift in the gravitational field of the Earth. It may already be happening, actually. There's a lot of evidence to say that it's beginning to happen. And I think that this in itself gives birth to a different way of life, a different feeling on Earth, and we're not quite as weighted down. And so I'm not sure exactly what is happening. I know that Fulcanelli and the Cross of Henday go out of their way to tell us that the upper cross is indicating the center of the galaxy, and the pedestal on the cross is indicating our solar system. And that when they become in alignment, when the sun and the center of the galaxy come into alignment, that's when the shift of the ages happens. Curiously, this same time period, there is a great cross in the sky, and the crossing is between Leo and Aquarius.
Really? Okay,
and Scorpio, yes, and Taurus, which are the four signs found in John's Apocalypse and in Ezekiel, the angel, the lion, the bull, and the eagle, which is Scorpio. And so it seems as if the Christians, and I believe that Christianity is the religion of the apocalypse, or the religion, the last religion of the Iron Age. It's the religion that tries to prepare us for the end of the age. And again, remember, I'm not saying the end of the world, I'm saying the end of the age. And we are going into Aquarius right now. So the whole thing is very curious and strange. And when you dig into Freemasonic knowledge, you find that the same symbols appear all through their the plethora of their writings and knowledge and in their initiation chambers, which I've been to in France and England. So this thing, they seem to have a fixation on when these four signs line up, or when we pass into one of these four quadrants of the zodiac. And there seems to be a lot of historical linkage for this. For instance, 6,500 years ago in the precession of the equinoxes, we were in the age of Taurus, and that just happens to be when cattle domestication came in.
Sure.
It happens to be when walled cities, which means war, frankly, began rising up in Mesopotamia. And 13,000 years ago, or exactly halfway through the processional cycle ago, at the age of Leo, we have the incredible extinctions of woolly mammoths and tree sloths and saber-toothed tigers, and great climactic changes. And it's also curious that the Sphinx, of which Fulcanelli calls our attention to from the beginning of the book, and tells us that the Sphinx controls the science. The Sphinx is a lion and it's facing east. When Leo is in the sun, when the sign of Leo is in the sun, that's the time of the great change. Well, that's now. When the Earth is in Aquarius, the...
Now, did Fulcanelli also write about the Hall of Records at the base of the Sphinx that Edgar Cayce said was there?
Well, that's a great question. He doesn't... Fulcanelli is never as clear as that. He makes you do the work. And if you look at the front piece of in Fulcanelli's book, or it's actually been reproduced in my book that I co-wrote, Mysteries of the Great Cross of Henday, is the front piece from Mystery of the Cathedrals. And on that front piece is an alchemist standing between the paws of the Sphinx. And if you look very carefully, you'll see that the Sphinx is standing on top of a giant stone building, indicating that alluvial soil from the Nile has washed up and covered up the building that the Sphinx sits on.
So there's something in that building that the Sphinx is on top
of. And we would think it would be a tunnel, of course, since it's covered up with dirt. But it isn't a tunnel. It's a building that got slowly covered up with dirt.
What do we think is in there, Jay?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people in power, and I think this is why the OSS and later the CIA was looking for Fulcanelli, there's... this group, this secret society that Fulcanelli is part of, is protecting knowledge that is of our history, way back.
Could we call them the Illuminati?
You don't want
to call them that.
No, the Illuminati are the what I call the pseudo tradition. They're the people who are in power.
The globalists. Right.
And yes, they are seeking out. I call them these people the keepers of the light. And they are actually seeking out the keepers of the light to find them.
Okay.
And the keepers of the light have withdrawn from history because of the power of the Illuminati.
I see.
And they don't want to be found. So that's why they release their information in odd and obscure ways, like Mystery of the Cathedral.
So these people that Fulcanelli represented, they're, I guess you could say, on our side, right?
That's right.
They care more about people.
Yes, they don't influence us overtly as the Illuminati does through the media and things. The keepers of the light, they initiate us covertly through great works of art and through understanding things in a more of an intuitive way. The knowledge of alchemy is an intuitive knowledge, not an exoteric knowledge. And so the hermeticists of ancient Europe would wander around in their poor clothes and change situations in towns and villages and make things better. The cathedrals themselves were designed to make things better in Europe, and they did. They, in fact, are what created the Renaissance. The building of the cathedrals is what turned Europe out of the Dark Ages. The cathedrals were built by alchemists. They were built by this society. And so the society does magic work, and they do it very discreetly, and they don't want to be found. I believe they still exist and that they still walk among us. I believe I've actually met one of them. I believe Whitley Strieber has met one of them. And I believe that they influence us very, very discreetly, and they know that everything is going to be fine. But they also know that between now and everything being fine, there has to be a purge. And so the purge, really, I believe, started on 9/11. And I believe that everything is coming out now. Everybody kind of knows everything now. There are no secrets. And whatever secrets there are, they're getting fewer and fewer. And I think that this is what happens at the end of time, is everybody finally gets to know everything.
Why did they make everything in secret terms? Why were they hiding things? I mean, almost to the point of codes where people like you, Jay, have to try to figure out what they're trying to tell us.
Because in the act of figuring it out, you are changed. And if you can't figure it out, that means that you didn't change yourself.
I see.
And as Fulcanelli says, the secret protects itself. So if that is why alchemy had the legend that it was concerned with changing lead into gold. If you were foolish enough to sit in your basement night after night boiling lead and saying chants over it in the hopes that it would turn to gold, then you got pretty much what you deserved. So it was a shell game. If you believe that, then that's where you got stuck. But if you knew the real purpose of alchemy, which is to change the human body into a body of light or a soul, or to reform the human spirit as the cathedrals do and as all of great works of art do and great works of science, then that is their work. So the Illuminati are deathly afraid of the Keepers of the Light, because the Keepers of the Light have all the knowledge and are completely hidden from the Illuminati.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about, of course, the Sphinx. I want to get back to that later, because that fascinates me, Jay. Mm-hmm. But is there a specific tie-in between the cathedrals that Fulcanelli writes about, the Mayans and all the Mayan temples, the Egyptians, the pyramids? Is there something that links them all together?
Well, there is. First off, their design is a peculiar design, and the design is of an alchemical nature. In other words, the cathedrals have steeples, and the pyramids all go to points. And this has to do with, I guess, what you would call hyperdimensional science, or the way that two dimensions interact. And alchemy is all about how to understand how the fourth dimension, or the fifth or sixth, but the upper dimensions interact with the third dimension. And these buildings are like amplifiers of 4D space. And when you build one of these buildings, especially out of stone, certain kinds of stone, you attract in this upper force, which draws down, and in Europe it would come down through the steeples and come down through the villages, and that's why they always built the cathedrals on the highest hill of the villages. In Europe you'll still find that. And the cathedral, or the pyramids, are the same thing. Well, they may have many other purposes. The pyramids are basically transducers of a dimensional material that comes through, and this material transforms us. As we have drifted into this final age of the four ages, we have lost touch with this other space, this other world, this orthogonal world, I call it. And this world is orthogonal and lies at right angles to us, and it is hyperdimensional space.
Are scientists trying to look at, for example, the cross at Tende, trying to look at the inscriptions, trying to figure it out? Or is this just, going by the wayside, where a few researchers like yourself are trying to figure it out?
Well, I think it did go by the wayside. I think it got rescued by the material that I've been involved in. But I think now that it's out, I think there's a lot of interest. I know the priest who runs the cathedral that the cross is at, and he told me a couple of years ago that there are thousands of people visiting the cross now all the time where no one came before. So this is getting known. I think, you know, that the people in power know of this, the keepers of the light, and they're looking for their works so they can decipher them. But they don't really have the ability to decipher them, so they depend on people like us. And then when they read what we write, I think it scares them because they don't want the world to end because they're in power. So they are. I think this really helps explain a lot what you see going on around the world, and the fact that there seems to be no care for the degradation of the environment or for future generations. I think that there's been like a cutting off of help to
us. It's a me attitude.
Yeah, and I think that they're all just scrambling for a place on Noah's Ark, and I don't know if there can be any Noah's Ark. I don't exactly think that the catastrophe that is ensuing, and we are in the middle of this catastrophe, it's a slow motion catastrophe, is a can run away from.
The Falconellis, as I will call them, because you think there are more than one. Are they around now? Are they alive?
Yes.
They are.
Yeah, and they're, I believe, immensely old.
Are they being replenished, basically, by other people?
They look for candidates out of the milieu of people who can understand what it is they're saying and pass their overt initiations. And yes, I do believe that as little as 1953 or 52, they were still accepting candidates. But at this point in time, they're not worried because there's not enough time left for them to have to replenish the stock, because after 2012, I think that everyone is going to be initiated.
It's a new ball game then, yep. Isn't it? Stay with us, Jay. Back with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Miss part of the show? Listen online with Streamlink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.